Today's the feast of Saint Monica, and her story is perhaps more appealing to people than the scriptures. She's an example of perseverance and of success. Her son, Augustine, is known as one of the most influential, brilliant theologians, thinkers in church history. It's hard to get anywhere in the study of church history or in the study of theology without running into Augustine. Augustine is the source of our knowledge about Monica, which probably distorts a little bit the true story of Monica, because what she's famous for is praying for the conversion of Augustine. She herself probably didn't think of her life as being completely consumed in the conversion of Augustine. She was dedicated to the Lord. But anyway, it's a great story. The story of Monica is a story of a woman of great faith. Now, probably not every saint has a saintly mother, but a lot of saints have holy mothers. We just don't know the story of what they went through. But in the case of Monica, we know what she went through because Augustine tells his own story. He was brilliant, he was ambitious, he was worldly, and he went his own way. So Monica, who was the only believer in the family, her husband was a pagan, she knew it was her responsibility to be the Christian. As I say, her whole life was not about Augustine. First of all, she had to deal with her husband, who was a bit of a problem. Proud man, violent temper, not always faithful, and his mother, who was also living with them. So part of the reason why Monica is such an appealing saint is because she had trouble with her mother-in-law, she had trouble with her husband, and she had trouble with her children. So pretty much every mother can relate to her. I don't know any mothers who don't have problems at least with one, if not all, of these three figures: mother-in-law, husband, and children, or at least some of the children. So she prays for the conversion of her husband. He converts before he dies. She prays for the conversion of her mother-in-law. She converts before she dies. And then Monica focuses all her spiritual energy on Augustine. Augustine says that she wept, that everywhere she went, she watered the earth with her tears. Now, that's probably a bit of an exaggeration, but no doubt she felt the sorrow of having a son who had such capacity for truth, so brilliant, but was seemingly going further and further away from the truth. So she certainly is a sorrowful mother, a weeping mother, but I think it's not right to portray her simply as a woman consumed with so much self-pity that she couldn't stop crying. That's not holiness, to be crying all the time. But she was sorrowful and prayerful. There's a famous story about Monica. She one time had a dream. Maybe you know this story, and I hope I don't get the details wrong because I can't remember it exactly, but it's something like this. She had a dream, and she was weeping and standing on a ruler. And she's approached by a bright figure, we probably interpret it as an angel, who says, "Why are you weeping?" And she says, "Augustine." "Augustine is my problem." And this angel, or whoever this figure in the dream is, says, "Don't worry, he will be standing where you are." And then in the dream, Monica sees Augustine standing on the ruler with her. So this dream was a great consolation to her. And she told, of course, she told Augustine, Augustine, I had this dream that you're going to be standing on the same ruler, meaning following the same rule of faith. And Augustine, who at this time, you know, was a cocky, brilliant scholar. I don't know if he was already, he was a Manichae. He belonged to a cult kind of, a false religion, the Manichaeans, Manichaeism. Anyway, so Augustine, with all his skill as a rhetorician, he was an orator, he was a writer, he tries to interpret the dream and says, oh, that what that means is that you're going to join me in following Manichaeism. And he probably did it in a very persuasive way, but Monica would not budge. She said, no. The figure in the dream said, you would be standing with me where I am, not that I would be standing with you where you are. So she put him back in his place. Monica herself was quite a bright woman. Not as well educated, of course, and not famous for her rhetoric, but famous for her strong faith. She knew the truth and she wasn't going to let her son deceive her. So this is what we have in the church. Augustine moves people to think and to ponder and to study and to learn their faith. But I don't know if he moves people to prayer. I don't know if he inspires people. But Monica, she inspires people to pray and to persevere in prayer, to be willing to pray for years, even for what looks like impossible cases. Remember, Augustine, not only did he join a false religion, but he picked up with a woman. He had a live-in partner, and they started a family. They had at least one child. And so Monica's dream was not that Augustine would be a famous bishop and theologian. Her idea was this man would at least get baptized and married. That's the basics. So that he wouldn't be living in sin and at risk of his eternal salvation. By the time she died, he had been baptized. So she saw him baptized. I don't think he was a priest yet when she died. I can't remember. I think he was, he dismissed his partner. The child remained with him, the son, although he died young. But I think when he dismissed the mother, the son remained with the family. And then he dedicated himself to at least a chaste life and to pursuing the Christian life. And I think that's the condition he was in when Monica died. But Augustine did continue it. His conversion was not only a one-time thing, but he continued to pursue the Lord and did become a priest and a bishop and an extraordinary figure. Okay, now with the story of Monica in mind, let's take a brief look at these scriptures. Today's gospel, this will be the last time we read in the daily masses from Matthew's gospel because we're at the end now. Next week we start reading from St. Luke and for the rest of the daily masses throughout this year. But here's the end of Matthew's gospel, and you know at the until before the Passion narrative, at the end of Matthew's gospel are a whole series of parables about the end, and about being accountable for when the Lord comes for us. And so he tells this parable of the master who entrusts his servants with large amounts of money, talents, 5 to one servant, 2 to another servant, 1 to another servant. We know the story. Those who received more were phenomenally successful in their investments. They doubled it, which is really unheard of, unless perhaps you hit it big on the real estate market or something. Usually investments, if you can get 5, 6, 8%, if you get 10%, you're really doing well. To get 100% return on your investment is really, really phenomenal. So those are the first two. Then the third one, well, he just buries the money in the ground. He doesn't lose it, but he doesn't gain. When it comes to money, we know that when we invest, especially if we're going to invest in something that has the potential of making a huge amount, there's also a big risk of losing. And the parable does not give an example of someone who took the risk of investing and then lost it. And then when the master comes back, he has nothing to return. The reason, or part of the reason why Jesus doesn't have to give an example like that is because he's not talking about money, and he's not talking about a risky investment. He's talking about spiritual gifts, and I think we can focus especially on love. When we love, we don't risk losing. Love, by its nature, has to be given, or we lose it. The only way to lose love is to not love. But if we do love, doesn't mean people accept our love or that our love will bear the fruit that we might like. But we ourselves always benefit if we invest love. 100%. 5 talents, 2 talents. But if we try to keep it, then we lose it. That's the nature of love. If we bury it, if we preserve it for ourselves so that we won't take any risk, then we lose it. It's taken away from us. So you see this phenomenon in relationships. Maybe the easiest example is the stage mother phenomenon, where the mother uses her child or her children for her own fulfillment of her own dreams. That's not loving. That's using, and it ruins the relationship. Or anybody who tries to use his or her spouse for himself or herself. That's not love. Because if we use people, then we don't love them. Monica is a great example of love. She spends herself. She keeps giving herself. That's why I don't think it's good to just portray her as someone who's weeping all the time. She was loving all the time. She was loving God in prayer, loving her neighbor in praying and interceding and sacrificing for them. She was growing all the time. That's why she's a saint. She's not a saint because she cried all the time. She's a saint because she loved all the time, and she grew to be a very great lover. So she is like the one who received 5 talents and made 5 more. She would not simply hold on. She didn't hold on to her son and try to make him what she wanted. She kept entrusting him to God. In the first reading, St. Paul is continuing to teach about wisdom and about the wisdom of God, which is not the wisdom of the world. And he says, look, you don't have what by worldly standards will make you important. You're not wise, you're not powerful, and you're not noble. And that's true of almost everybody. But God chooses the weak to shame the wise, the foolish to shame the wise. He chooses the weak to shame the strong. So that no one can boast before God. If we're going to boast, we boast in the Lord. We boast of what God has done. And this is what Monica can do. Monica would not say, I converted my son Augustine, or I converted my husband. She would not say that, because it's not true. She would say, God used me as one of his instruments for the conversion of my family. Thanks be to God. I'll boast in the Lord. Look at how good God is. That's Monica. So St. Paul says, this is how it's written, whoever boasts should boast in the Lord. If you want to proclaim something great, proclaim the greatness of the Lord. What does Mary say? My soul proclaims the greatness of the Lord. My spirit rejoices in God, my Savior. That's investment. That's love. That's other-centeredness. If Mary were to say, my soul rejoices in itself. My spirit rejoices in all the good things I have done. Well, you say, well, that's not holiness. What is that? Selfishness, self-righteousness, boasting. Okay, so these are the lessons we can learn from the scriptures, and in particular from St. Monica. Great example of love, of prayer, of perseverance, of faith, of holiness.